Next argument, the Marseille Hydro case, Mr. Harbeck.
Good morning, if it may please the court. This matter is brought before the...
Well, before you begin, maybe you could tell us how we... I was surprised to hear that there's hydroelectric power in Illinois, so flat. So how is hydroelectric power generated here?
There are some levels of... the Illinois River had, at various points along its canals, various points where it rised in levels and fell as it went to the Mississippi River. And at those various points, there is the ability to build a canal which would give a degree of variance between the upper level of the mm-hmm. canal and the lower level of the canal. And that race, the water running through that race, then, is what is used to supply hydroelectric power. In fact, Your Honor, there are numerous plants and facilities within the state of Illinois, right. all up and down the Illinois River and a couple other rivers. That produce hydroelectric power.
Okay, well, thank you.
Surely, Your Honor. As our briefs has indicated, Your Honor, we have assigned various errors to the court, various procedural errors as well as substantive errors. One error in particular, the one that I'd like to start with, would
before
be...
Before you get further, one of the things I missed here, I haven't been able to find the judgment. Now, the judgment, I take it, is some complicated injunction.
The judgment or the ruling from the court was made orally, Your Honor.
No, but Rule 65 says if the injunction is the relief ordered by the court, it has to be set forth on a separate document. So where is that injunction?
There is no injunction set forth in a separate document, Your Honor.
Well, then how do we know what the terms of the injunction are?
Your Honor, there is, and it's appended to plaintiffs or appellant. Initial brief, there is what is termed a transcript of the conclusions and findings of fact under Rule 52A.
And I thought one of your points was that we didn't really know what all of the terms of this, whatever it is, you know, order for specific performance or injunction or hybrid, because it is, in fact, the district court's transcript. It's never distilled out into anything precise.
If this, in fact, is a permanent injunction, I agree.
You haven't cited Rule 65. You know, Rule 65 is very, very clear about this.
If this is a permanent injunction, Your Honor, I agree with you.
You know, 65D, every order granting injunction shall set forth, etc., shall be specific in terms, and so on. And where is that?
There is no separate order or judgment. The only judgment that was entered in this case is appended to the brief, and it is a judgment of one sentence.
So why are you worrying? You don't have to. If there's no valid injunction, why do you have to obey it?
Because the question is this an injunction, a permanent injunction?
It couldn't be held in contempt for obeying and for disobeying an invalid injunction. I just don't get it.
The question is this an order of specific performance or a permanent injunction? We can't tell you.
No matter what it is, specific performance, an order of specific performance is a form of injunction. And it's punishable by contempt. But if it's not valid, then there's nothing to punish and there's no appellate jurisdiction. So I'm puzzled. Has the order been carried out?
No, Your Honor, it has not, as the modification to that order that came down in
February... The order
February
basically is for the order basically is for the plaintiff to go onto your property and repair the wall at your expense. Is that it, basically?
That's basically it, Your Honor.
But they haven't done that yet.
They have not, Your Honor. As the modification to the order in February of 2001 indicated, the court has agreed that FERC has jurisdiction over this particular matter. the court has stayed the effectiveness of that portion of its order until the FERC makes its decision. As we stand here today, the FERC has not made that decision. So nothing has been done with regard to the canal. Nothing has been done with regard to that order.
But when you, in your brief, criticism, particularly in your reply brief, I think, you criticize, I don't like to be stubborn about this, but you criticized, thought you criticized, I thought you criticized the details of the order.
I think that's in the opening brief.
That's in my initial brief.
In your opening brief. Now, these are not the details of the order in Judge Conlon's oral opinion, are they?
Those are details that we believe were left out of her decision. Details that need to be there in order for it to be a valid permanent injunction.
Okay, so they're not order. Set forth anywhere. In other words, your argument is
page
simply
40.
That...
Pardon? Page 40, I think, is what you're looking for. If I'm
right, okay, so your
yeah.
argument is simply that the all these details are left out.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that her oral opinion is actually the injunction? Is that the idea?
Her oral opinion came to certain conclusions which we believe were either a permanent injunction.
Somehow to be an injunction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
If I could follow up for a moment on the FERC point, it seemed to me that by the time all was said and done, and the district court had said FERC has to give a license to the hydro company before any of this work can be undertaken, the arguments you were making about the value of the FERC proceeding and FERC's right to decide what kind of work would be done and how it would be done have been satisfied, perhaps in a slightly different way than you thought they were going to be satisfied, but the FERC will now have a licensing proceeding, right?
Yes, the FERC has a licensing.
It's underway, and so you presumably have the right to have input into it. Others do too, whoever is there. So can I assume from that the points in your case about FERC and primary jurisdiction and all the rest of that are now off the table?
No, they are not off the table, Your Honor. The order as modified specifically said that it was only saying they had to get a FERC license, but the rest of the order with regard to who was going to do the work, what was going to be done, presumably
right, but
what...
Right, but the FERC point, I mean, isn't FERC now going to be the agency that has the first and perhaps the last word on that?
One would hope, but the order, the judgment that was...
I know, but your injunction, whatever this is, specific performance, you say, this has been stayed, hasn't it?
The injunction?
Because you haven't carried it. So if it stayed until the FERC licensing proceeding is over, why isn't that good enough? Because if FERC denies a license, then the order for specific performance will lapse, have no purpose. So what will you have lost? And if the license is granted, then the order will be... If it's valid, probably isn't, but if it's valid, it would then be enforced.
You are right. If they do not get a license, the whole thing is moot. If they do get a license, the question I pose is whether or not the order that this court has entered with regard to who is to do what, under what plans, is something that is going to prevent or foreclose the FERC from issuing an order with regard to those areas. As far as we're concerned, this judge should have never entered an order with regard to who was supposed
but
to do what
But what difference does it make? Because what would there be anything wrong with the order? If FERC grants a license, then presumably this order would go into effect. What would be wrong with that?
Because, again, FERC could determine that the plans to build this retaining wall or to repair the retaining wall should be done by somebody else.
Why would FERC care who builds the retaining wall?
Are you afraid FERC is going to think it's bound by this aspect of Judge Conlon's transcript where she's mentioning that Mr. Pickerel, you know, these specific, yeah, the Mario Finnis plan for sediment for wall repair and the Pickerel plan for sediment removal?
Yes,
why,
Your Honor.
Why would FERC be bound by that?
Well, we don't want this to have a preclusive effect on the FERC with regard to those issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact is, those are issues. The retaining walls are subject to numerous state and federal agencies with regard to national preservation of historic structures, because this is something that was built back in the turn of the last century, as well as the National or the Natural Resources Agency for the state of Illinois. None of those were considered when Mr. Finnis from Harza developed his plan for that particular
location. But can you be concrete? What would FERC say that might make this? Suppose FERC grants the license. Now, what might it do in that order that would somehow conflict with this this order?
It might determine, and when forensic tests were done, it was determined that the wall had not totally collapsed. The wall, as Judge indicates it below, is a cake on the bottom that goes under somebody else's land with just the wall coming up on the side of the canal. The wall faulted above an area 3 feet. That wall can be rebuilt from that 3 foot up instead of digging out and undoing the entire foot of the canal wall. They can decide it should be less evasive. They should decide that. FERC could decide that.
Why does FERC care about the details of how you... That's not their business.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. All of the construction and any agency in the state and federal government that has any input with regard to the nature of the construction is something that FERC takes into consideration. That includes the Department of Natural Resources and the department in Illinois here that takes care of preservation of historic landmark structures. This has been determined, though it's not designated as a landmark structure, as being within that agency's realm, so therefore any construction there has to comply with their conditions and terms, which haven't been determined yet. So, I mean, they can't just go and rebuild this wall any way they want to. FERC has the ultimate determination after discussing these matters with those various agencies.
Well, how far is the wall from the actual hydroelectric plant?
I don't know the exact distance, but my recollection is between a half mile. To my recollection, this raceway runs about 5 miles or thereabouts.
I would think FERC would be interested in, you know, that. They're going to grant a license if there's a water supply to turn the turbines, whatever they do. But why would it care about who is going to supply the water and how? And I don't get that.
Your Honor, again, the scheme created by Congress.
So in other words, you're going to participate in the FERC proceeding, and you're going to say, you know, have someone else repair the wall? Is that what you mean?
It's not only who is going to do it.
Are you going to participate?
Yes, Your Honor. My client is participating.
You are participating. Has it started, this proceeding?
The application of the plaintiff was finally filed, to my understanding, in May of 2001. That application is currently pending. And part of that process, again, is FERC. They have all of these different degrees of regulation, both state and federal. FERC's obligation is to bring it all together, to consult with all of these various agencies. Those agencies include both state and federal and municipal agencies, and everybody has input on not only where, how, with what materials. All of those items come together in the FERC.
Does the Corps of Engineers get involved in this, since we're dredging sediment from the canal?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Licenses have to be obtained
from
the Corps of Engineers.
They have to issue a dredge and fill permit?
Absolutely, Your Honor. All of which ultimately is under the auspices of the license and the control of the FERC in the regulatory scheme. So again, we believe that this judgment, to the extent it might make the FERC defer in its obligations or might otherwise...
Why not, as Judge Wood was suggesting, why not just wait to see? The judgment is being enforced, and maybe... and it's sort of information, and maybe FERC will decide, well, that's fine. Rather than start up another lawsuit after that? Suppose this judgment were vacated and FERC says, yes, this was the way to do it, you know, to force you guys to give access to the plaintiff and then pay for it. And then they'd have to bring a new suit because you're going to, of course, fight that tooth and nail.
If the FERC
you would appeal, would you not, to the Court of Appeals once FERC is finished if you don't like it, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So there is sort of another lawsuit in the making anyway.
Yes, Your Honor. Through the First District, I believe, or First Circuit, that would be the Federal Circuit. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Harbach. Mr. Shiflett?
morning. May please the court. My name is Leonard Shufflin, and if I may.
Before you respond to Mr. Harbeck, I'd like you to address an issue which you didn't get to, which I find a puzzling. It's this jury trial business. I don't understand your argument that somehow, as I understand your argument, when you filed your complaint, the defendant in his answer should have asked for a jury.
If they wanted a jury trial.
But your complaint just asks for injunctive relief.
No, it asks for declaratory relief, injunctive
even
relief.
Even declaratory relief preparatory to injunctive relief. There's no, I don't see in your complaint any claim for monetary relief or legal relief.
We did not seek any, nor did.
Yes, you didn't seek any. All you sought was injunctive relief.
Right.
And that's
now,
the
how
problem.
Can a defendant ask for a jury trial when all the plaintiff is seeking is injunctive relief?
How can the plaintiff ask
how
for
can the defendant?
Either party in a lawsuit that deals only with injunctive relief ask for a jury trial?
Well, if those are the only issues that are raised.
Not issues, it's relief. It's relief. If the plaintiff just asks for injunctive relief or declaratory judgment, that's equitable relief you're asking for. And the defendant has no right to a jury trial.
That's correct.
So how on earth can the defendant be faulted for not having, for having waited until it raised, until it asked for legal relief in its counterclaims?
It can't, but just asking for legal relief doesn't necessarily raise the right to the jury trial.
Oh, yes, it does. If you go back to the Seventh Amendment, you probably should remember this from way back when. It's the nature of the claim. Certain issues are triable of right to a jury, certain are not. Okay, issues in a purely equitable case are not tried to a jury because they weren't in 1791. Issues in a legal claim are in the first, well, when the legal claim first enters the case, and indeed the last pleading addressed to the legal claim, is the time from which 38B runs. They ask for their jury as soon as a legal claim, in the Seventh Amendment sense of that term, comes into the case. How could it possibly be late?
Well, it was late. On, for example, the rent claim. We raised the issue.
It's not issues.
You didn't ask for it.
It's not issues. Unless you wanted somebody to pay you some money. You just said you didn't.
But you can also have declaratory relief that raises a legal issue. For example, our complaint.
Look, declaratory judgments are part of the equity jurisdiction also.
It is, and it can also be part of the legal.
No, because you weren't asking for any legal relief.
We were not asking for legal relief.
Could you have asked for a jury trial?
Yes, we could have.
No, you couldn't
on
have.
The issue, on the issue of whether we owed the rent.
No,
couldn't.
You can't do that.
Because even
you
if you have mixed questions, in there you have questions of fact.
No. You're just complete and fundamental misunderstanding of the difference between equity jurisdiction and legal jurisdiction.
Well,
the same issues often give rise to claims for equitable relief and for legal relief.
That was my point, that you can have.
No, but look, suppose someone simply violated a contract with you, and the ordinary remedy for a breach of contract is damages.
Yes.
But suppose that because of irreparable harm, you were entitled, in lieu of damages, to ask for an injunction. So you ask for an injunction. You don't ask for the damages. You could, but you don't. You think injunctive relief is all you need. Well, you can't get a jury for that just because you could have asked for legal relief.
And we did
not.
Which
is completely wrong. And to show it's wrong, you don't have any cases to support your position.
Well,
you cited one totally irrelevant case, a case in which someone had legal claims but didn't ask for a jury trial and then later amended his complaint. And then the question was, well, did the amendment bring in new issues? Because it didn't bring any new issues and could have gotten legal relief initially. Why didn't he ask for it then? And nothing like that here.
But
you couldn't have gotten a jury trial because you weren't asking for legal relief, and your opponent couldn't have gotten a jury trial until he asked for legal relief.
But when the issues, for example, the issues of rent are raised, because that's the issue they raise in their counterclaim, the underlying...
Yeah, you're going in circles.
Mr. Stiflett, let me just put it maybe a little bit different way. Issues in the abstract are neither legal nor equitable. Issues are just issues.
Right.
Claims might be legal or might be equitable, and the Supreme Court has a whole lot of cases that discuss how we figure out which is which. And there's a line of cases that, starting with, you know, Beacon Theaters against Westover, Dairy Queen against Wood, Ross against Barnhart, and so on. There are a bunch of cases that say when you've got an issue that comes up in both the legal claim and the equitable claim, you have an absolute right under the Seventh Amendment to have that tried first to the jury, so that you don't have a situation where a finding of fact by a judge gets plugged into the jury trial instead of vice versa. And that's the mistake your opponent is saying that was made here. They made a timely demand for a jury trial as soon as there was a legal claim in the case. The common issues, of which there were some, had to be tried first to a jury. Then it's very common for the judge to go on and decide any other issues that need to be decided for the equitable part of the case and resolve that. In the meantime, the jury has resolved the damages claim.
But the jury trial is to decide a question of fact.
If a plaintiff asks for an injunction, there may still be loads of questions of fact. Those are determined by the judge.
But when the defendant asks for...
There you go, sir. Forget it. Let's move on to another remarkable failure in this case, and that is the failure to address Rule 65. Where is the separate piece document containing the injunction?
The separate document is the court's order, which was docketed at, I believe it's item 38 of the record. And in beginning at page 25, which is the last couple of pages of the court's oral order, the court lays out what...
Now, wait a second. So what are you calling the judgment? What are you calling the injunction?
The injunction is the order that was attached to the brief of the defendant, appellant, and it's docketed at item 38, and it's a transcript. And at page 25 of that transcript, at the last full paragraph, the court starts to address what the defendant, that the defendant has failed to make the repairs, and that the plaintiff is entitled to...
You call that an injunction?
Yes.
What you're talking about, the paragraph that begins with respect to the plaintiff's request for equitable relief?
Yes.
The court finds the rights are unique. That's not an injunction. An injunction is an order. This is reasoning. This is the justification for the order. Where's the injunction?
To the extent that it's a declaratory relief and considered an
injunction. Oh, declaratory or what?
The plaintiff is entitled in or upon the
defendant's
property.
Where's the injunction? Property. Is there an injunction?
There was relief given to the plaintiff.
Where's the injunction?
No one was enjoined from committing an act.
Is there an order of specific performance? Is there an order of specific performance?
This was in the nature of an order.
Where is that? Where's the order?
What I was reading, that the plaintiff is entitled to...
No, what you were reading, an entitlement is not an order. An order, it says, do something, let me onto your property. That's an order. Now, where's the order?
The order would then be...
Where is the order?
The item that was a judgment was docketed in court.
Where is that? Where is that judgment that was docketed?
I believe it was it was at number 39, which was the court's standard form of judgment.
That's just
order.
The one sentence. That
yes.
doesn't contain an order. An order, a doctor. That's what Rule 65 is about. Look, you enforce injunctions, including orders of specific performance, by contempt. In order to hold a person in contempt, you have to be able to point to an order that the person disobeyed. And where's the order that if the plaintiff disobeyed it, you could ask for a contempt sanction?
Would you answer my question? Where's the order? It would have to be item 38 of
you
the
have
record.
To say it's in this transcript. That's
yes.
what item 38 is. Item
yes.
38 is this transcript that you've reproduced. And it has a 38.
And signed by the judge. And that has
so
to be
point to the order of specific performance in that transcript.
That the plaintiff is entitled to enter upon the land.
Entitled? It's where is this? Where are you reading from?
I'm reading from the same paragraph that Your Honor started with.
The plaintiff is entitled to enter upon the defendant's property. So your idea is that sentence is an injunction that complies with Rule 65?
Right, in order to repair the wall.
Why does it comply with Rule 65? Anyway, you don't mention Rule 65. Are you familiar with Rule 65?
Yes.
Why didn't you tell the judge that... you know, every order granting injunction be specific in terms, describe and reasonable, not by reference to complaint or other documents and so on.
In this case, the evidence had been presented, the HARSA plan was spread of record.
Would you really be comfortable in seeking a contempt sanction if the plaintiff doesn't let you on to his land, and he says, look, this is unspecific. There are all these details that remain to be.
Well, I think there, in any injunction, it's going to cause some form of repair. There are always going to be details that can't possibly be specified.
Sure, they can be specified. They'd have to be specified, won't they? Look, suppose that you go on, you knock on his door and say, we're here to repair the canal. He says no, because there are all these details that he's discussing on page 40. What do you do at that stage?
At that stage, I say I'm prepared to proceed with Mr. Mario Finnis's repair. Here are the plans and specs that were presented in court, approved. You previously had them in your hands. If there's any general contractor would show up.
And he says, do you have an insurance policy? What if one of your workers is hurt? What if one of my employees is hurt? What if you make the wall collapse further?
Then those are all going to be my responsibility.
Interesting.
I would be doing, in this case, the hypothetical, I'm doing the work.
But if he says to you, look, I'm not letting you on my property until I actually see your insurance, would that be a reasonable...
Yes, that would be a reasonable...
That would be reasonable. So you couldn't get contempt. You couldn't get a contempt judgment when he refuses to let you on his property.
No, and if he...
Well, wait a second. No, you couldn't, right?
That would be correct.
But that means that, in fact, this injunction that Judge Conlon ordered is not enforceable because it doesn't specify in sufficient detail the obligations of the defendant.
It does specify. If I had workers who were leaving beer cans on his site and he did not come and he would not let me back on the site, that might be a reasonable basis too. Every injunction that's issued has to give someone a reasonable notice of what they're required to do.
And this one doesn't.
And I believe that this one does because...
In one sentence
that talks about a report that was spread of record, it was marked as exhibit and provided to the other side in numerous occasions, and the individual testified in court and was deposed.
But it's a technical report, and I guess the point is that there are a lot of things to... the construction project, even if we assumed this resolved what methodology was going to be used, that go into actually carrying out the work. There's third-party rights that are involved as well.
Well, I don't believe that...
negotiations with third parties?
I don't believe that's necessarily true. Now, third-party rights...
Is it possibly true?
This wall can be constructed without implicating the rights of third parties, including the landowner to the site. It can be built from inside the canal, as Mr. Harza testified, and you wouldn't have to go onto the property of the neighbor to do it. They chose to do it differently and got into some difficulty with the neighbor because of what they were proposing to do, but that doesn't mean that's the only way it can be done, nor is that the way that Mr. Finnis had proposed.
Do you have any comment on what Mr. Harvick said about the FERC proceeding?
There is a FERC proceeding. That was an issue raised as to whether we needed a license because we intended to expand and use some of the part of the plant that would not have been grandfathered. We elected to apply for a FERC license in any event. FERC will have full opportunity to review this and anything else that falls within its jurisdiction, although my suspicion is that this is not something that they normally pay a lot of attention to because it doesn't have anything to do with the actual generation of electricity. They approve the size of the plant and the methodology. They're not going to be concerned about how this wall is repaired.
How large is this plant? How much electricity will it generate?
4.75 megawatts when it's
4.75?
When it's fully operational. Phase one, the seven generators, small generators that are there, which is about 3.5 megawatts. The reason we applied for the license is we want to add six additional that had been used years ago, so it doesn't mean that the plant has to be changed that much, but then that will give us the 4.75. So this is not Hoover Dam.
Okay, we asked you a lot of questions, so you can have another 2 minutes if there's anything.
Well, I want to address the issues that are obviously concerning the court. I think the real issue is what was going to be different if this case is remanded. The only substantive issues that were raised were whether or not the wall collapsed because the water level was lowered, and I thought the district court addressed that quite directly. No expert came in, including Mr. Payne, their expert, to say that as an engineering matter, you use the water in the canal to support the wall. They have their dispute with Illinois Power as to whether Illinois Power's guy wire anchored into this wall may have caused the collapse, but that issue is collateral to the whole issue between the two of us, and that is whether under the indentures they have the obligation to repair and maintain the wall, which is what the district court was addressing. So I think that the real issue is if this is remanded, what's going to be different? There's been no showing of any additional facts or evidence that would be...
Well, are you saying there are no issues, no genuine issues of material facts so that this could have been resolved on summary judgment?
I believe it could have been resolved on summary judgment.
Wouldn't that have required disbelieving their expert? Judge Conlon found yours more persuasive, but that's not the same thing as saying there was no expert on the other side.
Well, she did say that, but I don't think that would have been a necessary conclusion for her to, or for any judge to arrive at the conclusion that we were entitled to the relief and that we had not caused the damage. Because she was
clearly resolving facts, though, since she thought she was trying it to herself as the trier of fact.
Yes. Because she heard all the evidence, but I think that the real issue is, would Mr. Payne never take the position that the dewatering of the canal caused the collapse or caused the failure. And that's the only issue that could be raised that would make us culpable in any way in this proceeding.
Are you saying that no reputable expert would say that the water is what supports the wall?
Yes.
And
if I recall the examination of Mr. Payne, he said that no engineer would design the wall today to be supported by the water. He said that he didn't know what the standards were in 1912, but he did not know of any point in time when it was an engineering principle that you would use the water in the canal to support the wall.
But isn't that a different question from whether, given that you have a wall that needs repair, changing the water levels might either make the repair more easy or less easy? I'm thinking of this bathtub at the World Trade Center where the Hudson River is pushing in at that particular wall, and the river is clearly exerting force on it, and these engineers are working hard to make sure that it doesn't collapse in the other direction. So I guess if you've already got a problem, it seems to me that testimony doesn't suggest that you wouldn't want to pay attention to what you were doing with the water level while you were fixing the problem.
Except that the problem here was, and both engineers Payne and Finnis agreed with this, the wall had already failed as a structural matter before the water level was lowered, therefore...
Well, and even that might make it even more important to be careful about what you do with the water. Maybe these are just factual points. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Schiffler, does he have any time left? 40 seconds. Do you have anything further you want to say?
Very briefly, Your Honor, with regard to the issue of whether or not there were any factual questions that should be on remand addressed. Mr. Shiflett addressed the question of what the experts said about the collapse of the wall. The fact is, when we went to trial on that matter, or on that day, the first thing we addressed was, because I brought it up, whether or not we're going to have a jury with regard to our counterclaims, which is the only place the causation was at issue. The judge severed it. We didn't proceed asking our expert questions about what should happen or what could happen or what finally caused all of this. He, in fact, had not concluded his forensic investigation until November, which was after trial.
Could I say, I mean, you've mentioned several times in your brief, and now you've said just now, that the judge severed the counterclaims, and she eventually dismissed them?
Counts 2 and 3 of the counterclaims,
yes. 2 and 3 of the counterclaims. And we do have a final judgment here, I hope.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I have nothing further.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schiffer. Thank you to both parties.